This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Time to go on the money with Chris DeSimio and Madeline Matlock from Pioneer Investments in Boston.
Earnings season continues to unfold on Wall Street. Many of the larger firms, particularly the banks, chiming in with earnings for the fourth quarter. Markets also continuing to digest a full plate of developing news on the economy. On Thursday, first-time claims for unemployment insurance were reported to have fallen by 37,000 to the lowest level in 5 years. Also, more good news from the housing market. The market's also keeping one eye on Europe, where some of the concerns about slowing growth and perhaps a recession continue to gnaw at people's sense of confidence, and also casting another eye across the Pacific Ocean into Asia, where the emerging markets, particularly China, are now the subject of quite a bit of discussion. And to help us frame the discussion, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Madeline Matlock, a chartered financial analyst, been in this business now 34 years. She is now a senior vice president and senior portfolio manager at Pioneer Investments in Boston, Massachusetts. And Madeline, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah. Madeline, tell us, there's been a good deal of talk about China and whether they can or might or already have somehow avoided going into a recession. And did they, in fact, engineer a soft landing? And are they, in fact, reaccelerating? What's your take on what's happening in the world's second largest economy?
Well, I think in China last year, I think they made a deliberate attempt to slow the economy down to keep inflation from getting out of hand and to damp some of the speculation that was going on in real estate markets. But as the new leadership starts to take control and assert their positions in running the economy, they're starting to loosen up and things are starting to pick up again. It's not clear right now what direction they'll take, if they'll continue to try to stimulate export markets or if they're going to be happy to also try to make the domestic demand market grow.
Mm-hmm.
I do think we have to keep in mind, though, that they do have an overt goal of dropping their overall growth rate to something more like 7 to 7.5% from the 8 to 9% they've had for the last decade. So
okay.
Growth will be slower, but it's not going to be slow by any global measure.
Sure, 7.5 compared to what the jury's still out, but I think consensus here for the U.S. is what, 2 to 3, depending on how lucky you feel?
Yeah, somewhere in there, and obviously Europe, I think right now is pretty much zero,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of Asia is a little higher, but not a whole lot.
How will they go about just mechanically stimulating domestic demand? How does that happen? What are the moving parts there?
There are a number of different things they can do. One is controlling the flow of credit through the economy so that people who want to buy houses or cars or other hard goods have either harder or easier time borrowing money.
Mm-hmm.
One major tool they have is the interest rate that's paid on deposits at the banks. Right now, it's very, very low, and it's stimulating people to invest their money either in real estate or in what they call wealth trust, which turn around and invest the money also in real estate markets. So if they increase the rate that's paid on deposits, they might be able to control the level of speculation in real estate.
Yeah, China also has some different ways of looking at how much money a homeowner needs to put down, how much skin in the game someone buying their first home should demonstrate. And also they have a different set of rules for second homes. Is that correct?
Yes. They're really trying to discourage a second home market because that's where the speculation gets frothy. But in terms of buying your first house, this is like Back to the Future. Back in the U.S. in the 70s and 80s, you had to have 20% down to buy a house.
20%.
Pretty much, yes. And they're pretty much, that's how they do it in China.
And if you wanted to buy a second home, if you were feeling flush, that's what somewhere around 50%?
Yeah, it's about half of the purchase price.
So
it's a lot different than what we had in the U.S. in, say, 2007, 2008.
What are some of the political risks, Madeline, in China? You have a new regime. apparently the market's not uncomfortable with these folks. You have a new set of players at the top, and also this kind of nagging situation with these deserted islands somewhere between off the coast of Japan, and Japan yeah. talking about rearming itself. Are these kind of, you know, what are the implications for investors with those developments?
It's really hard to predict. I mean, the tension between China and Japan has cranked up over the past year. The fight over the islands really doesn't have anything to do with the islands. They're just lost out in the middle of the ocean. It seems that the fight is really about what might be underneath, which is undiscovered hydrocarbon deposits.
Aha.
So China is trying to stake out as much underwater territory as they possibly can while these things are still murky. So it's really hard to handicap how this will develop. It seems to have calmed down in the near term, but nothing prevents that from popping up again in the future. I would expect these tensions will continue.
Sure. So speaking of hydrocarbons, there has been a good deal of discussion and actually money flowing based on the falling prices for natural gas here in the United States. Around the world, particularly in Asia, they don't enjoy the same drop in natural gas prices that we have, have they?
No. Natural gas prices in Asia are multiples of what they are in the U.S. because most of their gas comes from liquefied natural gas trains, which are pretty expensive to run. Japan, for instance, when they shut down their nuclear plants, had to replace that fuel source with LNG coming in by boat, and that's much more expensive.
Sure.
So it's kind of a weird world right now where we have very, very different prices for different kinds of energy in different parts of the world.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially now when you think of the flow of production from China back to the United States. Is that a big concern of theirs? I mean, are wages in China going up so much that they can make stuff for themselves and keep their domestic economy happy? Or are they still counting on the United States consumer to buy a lot of product made there?
Well, they need U.S. consumers, they need European consumers, they need consumers in all parts of the world. The U.S. is less important of an export market to them than it has been in the past, mainly because they've also grown their export markets in other parts of Asia. But the whole export sector in China is really, I think, probably a little overbuilt, and there will be continued pressures there. Mm-hmm. They were making too many goods for what the world as a whole is demanding.
What kinds of companies then based here in the United States, what sectors of the market would an investor looking for either growth or income or both be likely to feel good about when we have this conversation a year from now? What U.S. sectors would be the best way to participate in this reemergence of Chinese growth?
Well, it's not just Chinese growth. I think we're seeing growth really pick up a little bit in all of Asia, including a little bit in Japan. But the way you would participate in that is one of two ways. The first is directly, by investing directly in those markets. And the other way is to look for U.S. companies that are really benefiting from their ability to manufacture at a very good price here, either if they're energy intensive and using cheaper natural gas, or the fact that our labor costs and our productivity are quite favorable when you compare them around the world. So companies with export markets, and I think the focus that we've taken is kind of the middle market companies that make the goods that go to other manufacturers in other parts of the world.
Okay.
Machinery and parts, that sort of thing.
Some of these companies and these capital goods companies then, or these the chemical companies might be a good place to start looking around then.
Yeah.
Well, Madeline, this time has gone by very quickly. Once again, I want to thank you so much for taking time away from your perch, your new perch at Pioneer Investments in Boston, to be with us this morning. Thanks, Madeline Matlock.
Thanks so much, Chris.
And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.